Look out!
Surging up from the depths of the sea.
Horrifying, mysterious creatures whose attack on people sends the whole countryside on an endless search.
And unless something is done, and done quickly.
Is this the end of our civilization?
You'll pioneer with us the perilous descent into the unknown.
Yeah, what does that mean? What are you even talking about?
A deep, penetrating dive.
In the last calm and reflective moment before the monsters came.
Humanoids from the deep dive.
Welcome to the podcast, Humanoids from the Deep Dive, where we dig deep into the meanings and context of your favorite monsters and monster movies. Each episode will see guest hosts and myself give our take on an important movie, monster, and or film, what we think it means, using everything from history and philosophy to films and folklore. Today is another type of new format that we're going to be debuting, where we actually have an interview for the director of a brand new, really lovely film. And I'm really, really excited to get to talk to them and to share that conversation with you. So the Indonesian horror thriller Dancing Village, The Curse Begins is heading to international theaters, and you're not going to want to miss it. Directed by the Queen of Black Magic director Kimo Stambul, it's the prequel to KKN D. Desi Panari, the 2022 horror film that remains the highest grossing film in Indonesian cinema history. Dancing Village, The Curse Begins follows Mila, a young woman sent to return a mystical bracelet to the Dancing Village on the tip of Java Island. The journey leads her to uncover her own family history and that of the village's dark supernatural past, which she must face if she is going to survive a supernatural being known as the Batara Wuhi. It's an excellent supernatural horror film with a great entity at its core, and it is the first made-for-IMAX movie ever produced in Southeast Asia. It's a beautiful film. We're bringing you an interview with the director, Kimo Stambul. Please check the film out, and here we go.
You know, I really love the movie. You know, I'm a fan of your work already. So yeah, thanks.
It's kind of different, right?
Yeah, it's a little bit. It's a little bit. I really loved how the film was shot. It's a really pretty film. I think to start out, I was so interested to find out that this is the first film made for IMAX produced in Southeast Asia.
I think so. Yeah.
That's what they tell me. And I know there aren't even that many horror films in general produced for IMAX. Tell me what that was like, and if it changed how you approach the shots and how you incorporated the cameras.
Yeah, I'm luckily I still have my DOP DP working together since, you know, the beginning of my career, and throughout the way he's, you know, beginning, you know, understanding what we want and what the story is all about. And, you know, we grow up together, so we sort of learn together. And this is when it's the producer said that, okay, guys, this is IMAX we're talking about. Okay. Then we need to do our homework pretty much. And we sort of talk to the people in IMAX and we started to watch a lot of IMAX movies, and of course the workflow is kind of different a little bit, but what's important is it's how you treat the film and imagining that, okay, this is going to be this big, so we have to be particularly detailed in every aspect of it, even from the very first camera test that we did. We also, you know, we gave, you know, a few ratios and you know, give and take, and finally we decide, okay, we have to do this shot kind of like this, and I think this is a very big learning curve for us, and of course there's big much difference because of the scale and the wide of the shots of the frames that we are aiming for, that make us, you know, need more time to set up and really careful and really particular on the workflow that don't mess that up, you know. And yeah, thankfully when we got towards the editing room and towards the grading room, we see, okay, I think it should be okay. And we send that material to IMAX and we print it out. We test it out in here and see, okay, I think this sort of safe in a way. And for that, you know, I have to thank my DP and the producers letting us, you know, experiment and kind of bigger risk to shoot in IMAX because of, you know, it's not, you know, there's expensive to do that, right? And I think, you know, we give our best and hopefully people can enjoy it. The element, you know, support just not just the visual, but also the sound. I think the sound is also important in IMAX. Mm-hmm. And I am very thankful that we got my sound designer from Japan. We worked together in previous project. And I think he also knows, you know, bits in there and design it in a way actually to elevate the movie all together with the sound. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's pretty much a big challenge, obviously, in IMAX. And if I have to choose, want to do it again, of course I want to do it again and find, you know, because it's, you know, it's different. It's much more immersive to watch it in a theater, in IMAX.
Yeah, I think that works really well for horror too, because like you're mentioning, also sound design is so important in horror.
Yes.
And it's to be... the more immersive you are, the more pulled in you are to the scary world. So I think that's
exactly
I think horror is perfect for the format.
Yes. One of the things. Yeah.
Yeah. One of my favorite scenes is the scene when Mila gets pulled into the sort of like the dancing layer of reality with all the supernatural forces and with the entity. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of like all the serpentine dancers come out and there's a lot of beautiful, but really unnatural choreography. Tell me about that scene and choreographing and rehearsing it.
Well, this is my first time to do anything with choreographed dance, especially specifically the traditional of, one of the specific area in East Java. So it's pretty much a bigger challenge from the very beginning. We did not design 100% of the dance sequence because the dance sequence is actually it's a real dance sequence in the root of a culture of that area. So we took those, and the last scenes is something that we sort of improve with the choreographer. And again, it is something that it's sort of, you know, my take to the story, because in the script it's just showing that, okay, the dancer, blah, 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 just dancing around this magnificent castle with Badara Uhi behind it, right? And then I have to think of it, okay, how we make this visually, you know, interesting and what is the story? Because luckily this my choreographer actually, you know, designed the story from A to Z about the dance, right? So when they formed that, and then I told the choreographer, I think this particular entity, it sort of have a very big relation towards serpents. So that also, you know, how we try to move it, it flows like a serpent's and also it has those a little bit of a, you know, design also with the sound to make it more to that. And yeah, man, and eventually when we shot it, we see, okay, this is cool, this is you know, according to plan that we wanted to. And eventually it is something that, you know, it's not easy to do because there is a lot of choreography going on and it's, it needs, again, the challenge is to put that and the final scene, hopefully cut to cuts with the reality that what's going on. And, you know, we just see it. Okay, I think this is will work, and hopefully the audience will understand what it meant.
Cool.
Yeah. And yeah. I think we did that. We did that only for what? For three days of shoots. Cool. It's really
yeah, tough. It's a really unnerving scene, but it flows so well, and it's really memorable. Like, the whole scene is really memorable. I liked it a lot.
Oh, cool, man. Thank you, bro.
Yeah, definitely. Butter Awuhi, I know, so this is a sequel to the highest grossing Indonesian film of all time.
Yeah.
And that's based off a Twitter thread, which I didn't read the original thread, but I have seen the first film. I thought that it was really cool because you get, as a prequel, you get to flesh out the mythology a little bit more and the lore. So what was present in the thread, and what, like, how did you shape and evolve the lore and put it into the story?
Well, again, on this project, I worked close with the original author of that thread. And I think, yeah. What's in is obviously, and what's not work, what, you know, the producers want to improve and all of that. We discuss it together. Well, some of the things that was in Bandara Wuhi, it's most of it is sort of the set and actually the dance also. But here, the culture of the dance, we make it more authentic. I think the first one is kind of improved a little bit, and also the costume mm-hmm. we sort of, you know, go back towards the real story. Okay, and well, it's kind of different in a way, just a little bit different, but we make it, you know, more authentic and you know, as close as much possible towards the reference that we got from the author. Mm-hmm. And you know, luckily I have that time to do. And also, what else? Yeah, I also, you know, dig up Badarwi herself. What is she's look like? Because the first one, the producer doesn't really, you know, not liking it, but you know, he wanted to improve it, and we sort of talk about it, and we go, you know, as far as the route goes, and see, okay, this is something that we can take, and this is something that we can apply towards the main character, Badara Wuhi. And also, I think for me overall, we want to make it towards more darker in a way. If you can see the difference between the first one and the second one, I mean, the sequel, sequel or prequel or spin-off of this KKN universe, is, you know, I make it more darker in a way, and I think the author really wants that to happen, and mm-hmm. and yeah, he's pretty happy about that, you know, and yeah, it's kind of that way probably, Jeff.
Yeah, I loved it. I thought it was it was bleak, but it was great. and not totally bleak, you know. There's hope at the end, but I really enjoyed the journey.
Yeah, it's sort of bleak. That's correct, man.
Hey, you know, sometimes there's forces beyond your control. It's going to be bleak. What are you going to do?
Yes, correct, 100%, bro.
So yeah. I know from our earlier discussions that it's important for you personally to sort of raise the visibility of Indonesian horror and the international sort of like notoriety. I think that I'm certain that this is going to be received well. So like, tell me about like where you feel things are at for that project, and how do you hope that this kind of ties in to raising that profile?
Well, I'm hoping that I can do more towards this project, honestly. Like, you know, oh man, if this is an R-rated, I think I can do bigger push. But But I understand what the producer's vision is all about, you know, because mm-hmm. before it's pretty much successful and it rated PG-13. So in that way, I sort of, okay, I understand the situation and wanting this to be more broader audience. And okay, let's just do PG-13, but, mm-hmm. you know, give me just some elements towards my sort of signature in a way. And I'm hopeful that, you know, this can bring more audience, hopefully by you know, worldwide. And also the traditional elements also, I'm hoping that, okay, now people can see more of the traditional stuff, because I think, and I discuss it with so many Indonesian people, Indonesian audience and Indonesian producers, they said that, okay, we do have some rich culture here and some of it quite horrific, but kind of cool in a way, if you can package it in and make it, you know, make it universal. And I'm hoping that this story still has those elements of universal, so people worldwide can actually, you know, be entertained, or, you know, knowing that this sort of stuff exists, or this sort of stuff, you know, exists in horror genre
type. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I also think it's interesting too that you bring up the sort of the cultural context yeah. that really came through. But I also think it's an interesting franchise because both films have like these younger, really modern people that are faced with this older, even a generation or two back threat coming forward. So there's almost this clash between the really like the modern and the youthful and the tradition. And yeah. I wanted to know if you could tell me a little bit about that, because it plays so well into the whole franchise, and I think it's interesting.
Yeah, that's also came from the author, and mm-hmm. we discussed that, and I think the first earlier draft is set up not too far from the first one, right? And we discussed it, and I think they decided to make it in the 1980s, because the 1980s in Indonesia, there's a lot of stuff going on, and there's nothing, you know, can save them technologically like on today. Mm-hmm. And the relations, yeah, we try to blend it in, the old traditional, like the people from the city going into that village type mm-hmm. of thing. I think that's also works, because I think most of Indonesian can relate to that. And that's why we sort of like cross fingers that it will work for larger audience in Indonesia. And I think it did. The story is sort of, you know, the story is kind of universal, actually, you know, just a daughter wants to save the mom. Mm-hmm. And she unveiled a quite dark past of what she's finding out. And I think that made it, you know, made it cool. And we sort of believe that type of concept will actually, you know, be okay. And, you know, and yeah, that's why I think the producer decided to go with that, you know?
Yeah, I dig it. So I've been informed that's my last question. Thank you so much for your time. It's been a pleasure. Okay. Chatting with you.
Thank you, Jeff.
Yeah.
Once more, I'd like to extend a special thanks to our guests this episode and to all of you out there listening. From the dawn of recorded human civilization, we've been fascinated by monsters and the monstrous. They've inhabited our dreams and nightmares. They've been our protectors and our villains. They've symbolized our fears and vices, our hopes and potential. Fears of creatures and the night that nourishes them were key inspirations and fuel for the rise of human civilization. The need to get out of the shadows, behind the walls, and into the light. In many ways, understanding our monsters is an important part of understanding our world and ourselves. So thank you for taking this journey with us, we humanoids from the Deep Dive.